Well, we want to welcome you to Life on the Rock. Hello, I'm Jeff Cavins, and we have a full coffee house here at Life on the Rock. And we're talking about a topic that really affects all of our lives. It's the topic of happiness, and we want to talk about that this evening. I want to ask you the question, are you happy? Are you really, really happy? And what does happiness mean? What does it mean to be a happy person? We're going to talk about that, and we're also going to talk about some other subjects that I think you will be very interested in. We're going to talk about suffering. We're going to talk about the subject of abortion and euthanasia and how that relates to you being happy. You might remember just a while ago, a few years ago, there was a singer that said, "Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, just be happy." And I think the reason the singer said that is because really the goal of our culture is to be happy. Everybody wants to be happy. It's nothing new. St. Thomas even said that everybody wants to be happy. And you know what? God wants us to be happy. And the Beatitudes start off and they say, "Blessed are." And when you look at that word blessed, it means happy. Happy are those who are persecuted. And on and on and on. God wants us to be happy. But the question is, how are you going to be happy? We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. I want to welcome all of you that are watching by way of television. Welcome all of our radio listeners around the world. We want you to participate on the show with us today. And I'm going to give you a 1-800 number. If you're listening by radio, you can write it down. We want you to call in. We've got a very special guest today, Camille de Blasi. And she's going to be talking about happiness. The phone number is 1-800-221-9460. That's 1-800-221-9460. And all the way from Springfield, Missouri, we have Ashley back here on the email tonight. You can send her a letter, a question, and the email address is rock@ewtn.com. As I said just a couple of seconds ago, everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to be happy, but the question is, how are you going to be happy? What does our culture define happiness as? Some people would say that it's having a good education, then I will be happy. Others say that I have to go beyond a good education, I have to have a good job if I'm going to be happy. Others will say, if I just meet the right person, then I will be happy. And still other people will say, I need a lot of money, and then I'll be happy. I need to achieve a lot. I need to become someone. I need a name for myself. Then I will be happy. But what's interesting is that everybody in our culture, particularly young people today, but not exclusively, but I'm focusing in on young people for the sake of the show, they're interested in happiness, and they're going after happiness, we'll learn what that is today, with all of their heart. But we live in a culture that is, for the most part, very unhappy. We have more than at any other time in the history of the world. We have more things. We have more gadgets. We have more money. We have more medicine. We have more entertainment. We have more means of communication than at any other time in the history of the world. And yet we have more antidepressants. We have more suicide. We have more families crumbling. If the goals of this society are to result in happiness, then what is wrong? Why isn't it working? On today's show, we want to wake up and we want to address this and say, you know what? It's not working. The American dream doesn't necessarily make people happy, but what will make a person happy? And when a person is happy, how will it affect how they treat other people, friends, the unborn, those who are sick, those who are elderly? We're going to look at the relationship between those two today. I want to also remind you to pray for the Holy Father, pray for the leadership of our church. We have a wonderful, wonderful Pope. Just yesterday I was sitting in my office and I was going through all of the encyclicals. I must have this many encyclicals in my office. And I was putting them in groups based on which Pope wrote what encyclical and apostolic letters. And I had Pius the 12th, I had Pius the 9th, Pius the 10th, Pius the 12th, I had Leo the 13th, and I had John the 23rd, and Paul the 6th. And then I had this stack, and the stack was this big of the encyclicals of John Paul II. And then all the other writings, the stack was this big. And then I had a stack of books about this big of his writings. Well, the most prolific writer in the history of the church, and I want to encourage you to pray for him and to begin to be a student, of course, of Jesus, but to become a student of John Paul II, and to find out about his readings, about his writings, and what he has to say to us as young people today. I'm excited about today's show. I am really encouraging you to stick with us on this show. We're going to touch on some things that you're going to have to do a little bit of thinking about, but I promise you that you are going to reap a lot of fruit from this show today. Our guest, Camille de Blasi, and she comes to us all the way from Seattle, Washington. We'll be back in just a moment. You're watching Life on the Rock.
Remains a land of many saints, though her faith has been tried by war and tyrants. France has been called the eldest daughter of the church. Join us for an all-new two-part special presentation here on the Global Catholic Network, EWTN.
On the next edition of We Are One Body, join Donna and her special guest, Katrina Ray. Inspiration, interviews, unforgettable performances on the next We Are One Body, only on EWTN.
Welcome back to Life on the Rock. Our special guest tonight comes all the way from Seattle, Washington. She is a writer and speaker, and we'll find out more about her. She is a dynamic young lady in the area of communicating truth, the Catholic truth, to young people in our culture. I'd like you to welcome Camille de Blasi. Welcome. You and I have had one of the best conversations just before the show.
We did, indeed.
Sitting back there in the green room.
We did. And something I didn't do when we were in the green room that I meant to was I brought you a gift all the way from Seattle in our great Northwest tradition. You've heard of fish in a can. I have brought you fish in a box.
Fish in a box.
This is smoked salmon in a box all the way from Seattle.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Are we going to eat this now?
No.
Okay. Would you like some? I love smoked salmon. I do. That's
very
great.
Good,
thank
right?
you very much. I was up in Seattle last year. I think you and I missed each other. I was up there, and we went out to eat. And I mean, they brought salmon out. It was incredible.
We call this happiness level one, and we'll get to that in a moment.
Well, we do want to talk about that tonight, and we do have so much to share on this subject. As I said in the opening, our culture is really fixated on happiness.
Yeah. And it should be.
Yeah, and going after it. Before we get into that, tell me a little bit about what you do and where the apostolate that you're involved in.
Well, I work with an organization called Human Life of Washington. We're actually the state chapter of National Right to Life. And the division I work for is called the Center for Life Principles. It was started by Father Robert Spitzer, who mm-hmm. is the president of Gonzaga University. He's been in the news lately for doing some very good things for the pro-life movement. And the essence of what he's trying to do with this program is to teach our culture that there's something wrong, that we're living beneath ourselves, and that abortion and euthanasia are answers to our problems only because we're living for the wrong things. And so my work is destined to try to help our culture to see that there is a greater depth to what you are meant for. And when we see that, then we will start to see abortion and euthanasia not as answers but as part of the problem.
Camille, so many of our young viewers are involved in the pro-life issues. They go to the Washington March, and they're involved in prayer and vigils and so forth. I'd like you kind of to set this up. A lot of people are involved in fighting abortion, but a lot of people don't understand why people have abortions. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about why the current methods that we use to fight abortion may not work.
Very good. Part of one of the greatest missions of John Paul II is to call us towards catechizing one another, towards teaching mm-hmm. one another in the faith, and in why we believe what we do. And in fact, this is what St. Paul told us when he said, be ready to give a reason for the hope that is in us. And our culture, unfortunately, doesn't really know what they're living for or what they're looking for. And so I remember listening to a radio program once where the host was talking about how, you know, kids, like you were saying, we have so much. Mm-hmm. And why are we so depressed? It doesn't make any sense. And this kid called in. He was about 21 years old. And he said, you know, I defy your confusion on this issue. It's really very simple. He said, back in your grandparents' days when people didn't have anything and you say that they were so happy, it's because they had something to die for when they went off to war, when they died of diseases that we never hear of anymore. Today, we don't even know what we're living for. And that kind of suffering is the worst kind of suffering that exists. And so it's good for us to have all these many different aspects of the pro-life movement, right? The I can't say to the hand, I don't need you. Right. We need to have the presence in front of clinics. We need to have those who do the crisis pregnancy counseling, because without them, women are lost. We need to have post-abortion healing. We need to have the organizations that work in legislatures and work to change law. But we need a conversion of the heart. We need to teach the heart to convert the heart.
You're talking about the society as a whole.
A society as a whole. And not just society, because society means a grouping of people living together. Culture means what comes out of that society, what we believe we will value, what is meaning and purpose in life, how we interpret everything from success to quality of life to love to freedom, rights, suffering. So really what we're trying to do is not just the society, but to convert the culture, what we call healing the culture, bringing it back into life by changing one little thing, what we mean by happiness. And you sort of pointed this out in your intro. It was Aristotle who said that happiness is the one thing that can be willed for itself. Mm-hmm. In other words, human beings want happiness in and of itself. That's it.
And that's true of everybody.
Every human being. But everything else we will for the sake of happiness. So everything else we want is just a means to the end of happiness. And what that means then is, if you want to change the way people view quality of life, what they think love means, how they interpret suffering, what they think is meant by a human right, mm-hmm. how we view freedom, you have to start at the beginning. You have to change what they think will make them happy. In other words, what is happiness? What they think is meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in life. And our culture doesn't have a good grasp of that, and it's no wonder then that
you,
we suffer.
You realize what you're saying.
You, big job.
You're talking about changing the entire culture and what our goals and objectives are as a culture.
Can't solve the problem of abortion by just changing the law. Absolutely impossible.
You won't change if the laws change, you're saying.
No, because you haven't changed the heart, and the heart does not believe. And if the heart does not believe, it will rebel. And when it rebels, the law will eventually change back again. Mm-hmm. The only way you're going to stop abortion is by turning the heart towards truth so that the heart no longer desires it.
Before we talk about turning the heart towards truth, and you're going to love this. When she shares some of these steps with you, it's going to just transform your way of thinking. Before we do that, give us a thumbnail sketch about the way the world thinks right now.
Okay. Basically, we divide happiness, what we call this, the four levels of happiness. And everything I teach you comes from Father Robert Spitzer, who has written us this book and has given me the tools to be able to teach this. Our culture lives on the lower two levels of happiness. We're what I would call an H1, H2 culture. Mm-hmm. And yet they don't even know that H3, H4 exists. The first level of happiness is what we would call physical pleasure or possession, right? Just had a great meal at your Madonna house. I lunged into it, really enjoyed it, right? It made my taste buds just erupt with joy. And that would be happiness level one. Physical pleasure and possession. The happiness that comes from using our five senses and delighting in fulfilling those five senses. But of course, human beings, it doesn't take us very long to discover that that's not enough. We want more than level one. And how do we find that? What we would call crisis level one. Boredom, right? Lack of self-esteem, starting to feel like my value is equatable with that of a rock because the only thing I'm fulfilling myself up with is a thing. Mm-hmm. And Plato asked a very important question. He said, you know, he didn't say quite this way, but his point was, If you look around you, you see plants. Right? A plant desires only physical to fulfill itself with physical sustenance.
Water.
Water, sunlight, soil, oxygen. Right? Some people say music, but it's not the words of the music that give the plant meaning to life. It's the vibration reaction causes a chemical reaction. So plants get what they want physically and they thrive. But human beings, Plato noticed, do something odd. We fulfill ourselves with physical pleasure and we become bored. And boredom signifies there's something deeper. Why, he said, why do you desire something more? You don't have groups of plants who wander around contemplating the meaning of cosmos, right, or the meaning of compost, or the meaning of, you know, weeding. But you have human beings who contemplate the meaning of life and what does it all mean.
You just to pause there for a moment at level one of happiness. You're already describing a good portion of the young adults in this country, and I would dare say the world, and that is that they are stimulating themselves physically, whether it be with illicit relationships or drugs or drinking, whatever it might be, and they are reaching a point where they are bored, and they're saying, is there more?
And they want more.
They want more.
And if they don't find more, your life ends up in despair. Because basically what happens, and Jean-Paul Sartre found this out, you know, and whether or not he ever got out of his crisis, we'll never know. But, well, I guess someday we will. But what he found out was, I desire something more. But I don't believe there is anything more. And so life is absurd, right? How did he think that? Because every desire has to have the fulfillment. Otherwise, what's enticing you? If I have a desire, there has to be an objective, an end, something that's drawing me towards desiring it. And if what we desire is more than physical, but I believe I'm just a physical body, just a material self, then I'm going to despair. I'm going to say, I want more than physical. That's all there is to life. Life is meaningless.
Well, you have to wonder. I mean, looking around at some of the young people in our coffee shop here today and those that are watching the show and listening to the show by radio, are you in a culture right now at school, college, at work, where you've heard people say, I feel like people are treating me just like a thing?
Yes.
Just like a thing, and that they're looking for me to provide just physical pleasure.
Very true. Well, just as there are four levels of happiness, there are also four levels of self-esteem. How do you esteem yourself? Is it because of what you have physically and your material possessions? Mm-hmm. Because if it is, then you're going to think that you're only valuable if you possess a lot of things. Fortunately, that's not all there is to life. We have three other levels, but we need to teach them.
Okay. So, we're at a point where we... As you said, there's the physical pleasure.
We need to move beyond that, right?
We need to move beyond that. Where do we move beyond
that? Well, the crisis is good because despair and hurt always points to something else. And so the second level is the awakening of a sense of self. Oh, there's not just these external things that are turning me on and making me happy and feeling good, but I have a self. This is, by the way, what separates us between the animals. An animal doesn't have a notion of self. Right? He can have physical pleasure. He can experience happiness level one. But not happiness level two, the sense of myself. And I can compare myself to all these other selves, right? And I can contrast, and I can be better than other selves. I can do something, achievement. So happiness level two, in a nutshell, would be achievement or ego high. And related to that, power, popularity, admirability, success, winning, and being better than the other. And that's good, right? If you didn't have happiness level two, there would be no drive to better society. There would be no drive to build bridges and, you know, be athletic and keep my body in shape. H2 is good. And by the way, H1 is good too, right? You have to be able to eat or you won't survive. Where's the problem?
The fact is, eating can be very pleasurable.
It can be quite pleasurable, and God makes it enjoyable
fattening
so that we
too.
Will pursue it. Where does the problem come when it becomes fattening, right? Where's the problem with happiness level one? When we put one little word in front of it, only, the only thing that makes life worth living is physical pleasure.
It's or whatever.
Right. So, in the same way, if you put that only in front of level two, it becomes unhealthy too. And I think even more than level one, our culture is a level two culture. A culture that seeks ego highs, accomplishment, be all that you can be kind of a mentality.
Sure.
Winning
that's
and
really
succeeding.
True.
You watch TV for,
yeah.
Boy, I don't have a TV, but... except, of course, I go to the neighbors to watch EWTN all
would.
The time. But you know, you watch TV for 2 hours any Wednesday, Thursday night, and it's all happiness level one, two. That's all the messages that you're getting. Any billboard is advertising on a level of H1, H2. any entertainment industry.
That's true. They said just this last week, there was some statistics that just came out that 86% of all programming on television involves sex.
Yeah.
86% of all programming on television.
But you see, the question is, you know, which came first, TV forcing this on us or us asking for it? And the problem is, it's both. We're a culture of H1, H2.
So if I'm in high school, I'm in college, out there in the working world right now, I'm surrounded by people, and I may be one of them, that is seeking physical pleasure, stimulation in my life, realizing that I come to a point where I realize that's not enough, there's got to be more, and I start to move into what you would call the happiness 2 level, and that is I need to start achieving. Mm-hmm. I have an ego, I have a self, and I need to kind of build myself up. I want to be popular.
Right.
Not only do I want to feel good, but I want to be popular in my school. I want others to see that I'm fast. I want to be, in fact, the fastest guy in the school. I want to be the fastest guy in the state. And are they saying that if I am the fastest runner in the state or part of the best football team in the state, that I will be happy?
Then I'll be happy. Well, unfortunately, no. And the reason why, of course, is because you are meant for something more. You are made in the image and likeness of something. And it's not for yourself. Mm-hmm. If it was, you would be content, but you're not. And how do we know that? Because look at what happens to somebody whose their whole life value and worth and meaning and purpose in life is this competitive game. You know, who's winning more, who's winning less. Who's got more, who's got. Who's more popular, who's less popular. Who's more successful, who's who's more powerful, who's. Okay, you get the point. You go through all of this, and you look back on your life, and you say, now, am I a winner? If the answer is yes, and you're looking at that as meaning and purpose in life, you're going to eventually encounter incipient despair. And the reason
explain
why...
Explain that.
Despair?
Incipient.
Incipient.
Despair.
Total, deep sense of immediate grief about who and what your life is about. And the reason why is because you're looking at this and you're saying, I'm not happy. First of all, I'm alienating all of my friends because your friends are recognizing that the only thing that makes your life worth living is being better than them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I'm alienating my friends. I'm isolating myself from my community. I'm always having to up the stakes, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm not content with a plateau. The only thing that makes my life worth living is, you know, doing better at school and getting a good grade and beating out Mary and Tom and Sue in the test tomorrow. Right, and then I've done it. Well, that's nice, but plateau, all of a sudden, if I plateau and stay there, then I start to feel like a loser.
I want you to stay with that thought right there, because we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue with that thought. We're talking with Camille Duplessis about happiness and suffering and abortion. We'll be right back.
Experience the adventure of a lifetime.
This summer, go on a pilgrimage to some of the world's most holy sites.
From June the 17th through the 30th, don't miss your chance to travel to Europe with other young adults.
See Paris, Rome, Assisi, and many more sacred places.
Walk where St. Therese, St. Francis, and Joan of Arc walk.
Here's a chance with the world-famous monks of Solène.
Attend Mass in Rome with Pope John Paul II.
An EWTN camera crew will be there to film the whole trip for an upcoming series.
This is the time to grow closer to God.
This is the chance to discover His friendship.
Come on this journey of discoveries.
Call 1-800-455-5514 or send an email to wepilgrims@aol.com.
Experience His friendship.
God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. I believe in Jesus Christ, His only Son, our Lord. He was conceived by the power of the Holy Spirit and born of the Virgin Mary. He suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, died, and was buried. He descended to the dead. On the third day He rose again. He ascended into heaven and is seated at the right hand of the Father. He will come again to judge the living and the dead. I believe in the Holy Spirit, the Holy Catholic Church, the communion of saints, the forgiveness of sins, the resurrection of the body, and life everlasting. Amen.
Life on the Rock, our guest Camille de Blasi, and she's talking to us about happiness, but more than happiness, and we'll get to that. And Camille, we've talked about two levels of happiness so far, the physical realm of stimulation and the physical. We moved on to achievement, ego, popularity, and I couldn't help but notice, and I mentioned it to you during the break, that from about midnight till 6 in the morning on television, you see nothing but level 2 offerings.
Right.
You can be happy, you can have more, you can be a winner, you can achieve, and so forth. But is there anything beyond achieving? Is there anything beyond just
there
being happy in the physical realm?
There is indeed, and the enticement towards that is that if you're a winner, you're always going to feel, you know, this incredible sense of alienation. If you're a loser, you're going to feel jealous and bitter. And if you have faith, you might even be angry at God because you're going to feel like He made me this way. And then if you're somewhere in the middle, you always have this constant suspicion of everyone around you that they're always wanting to steal your ground, and you're going to always be very anxious about the next competition. So that next level is necessary to move us out of ourselves, because the whole world kind of is focused on ourselves and collapsing in on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what happiness level 3 does is it moves that spiral the other direction. The only other way to go is out. And what it says is, I'm meant for something bigger than myself. I'm meant to take my gifts and my talents and successes, and these things are good when they're used not as an end in itself, but as a means to a greater end. Contribution. Gift of self. That's how the Bible defines love. So happiness level 3 is love and gift of self through contribution.
By contribution, you mean giving of yourself,
getting outside of myself, giving of myself in any way, giving of myself in my community, in my family, in my church.
Yeah, but Camille, if I spend my time giving of myself, outside of myself, then how in the world am I going to achieve those things that I need to achieve?
You see, this is where the Catholic Church is so beautiful, because it teaches us the balance. That level 1 is good as long as its horizon is level 2. It's good for me to eat and drink and be merry, right?
Mm-hmm.
As long as its objective goal is to better myself so that I can do things with the gifts God gave me,
mm-hmm.
so that I can succeed and achieve. Popularity and respect and admiration, those things are fine. As long as I'm wanting those things with level 3 as my horizon,
sure.
so that I can give of myself for others, because that's what truly will make me happy. But there's the crisis in level 3, too.
What would be the crisis? Because I know a lot of people who do give up themselves, and they're very generous people, but they reach a point where they're unhappy.
And the reason why is because human beings are very interesting in that we don't just want love. We start wanting what Plato would have called his 5 transcendentals, right, in level 3. I want truth. Human beings just don't want truth, though. We want all the right answers to all the questions. We want infinite truth. We want love, but we don't just want love sort of conditionally the way human beings. I'd like to be unconditionally loved by an infinite, eternal, ultimate, perfect, and unconditioned soul.
Husband.
Yeah, right.
That's right, what we look for.
And if we don't look for it, by the way, that's a good point. If we don't look for it in an unconditional, unconditioned, infinite, eternal source, we're going to start looking for it in one another. Why? Because we're all an image of that ultimate infiniteness, and we see
God.
A piece of that in one another,
mm-hmm.
and we'll start to make gods out of each other. You be God for me, and I'll be God for you, and we'll be really happy because we'll be able to fill up each other's needs eternally and infinitely and forever.
Sure.
Yeah. And pretty soon we find that that's not working.
I've tried to be God before, and I do a bad job.
Then do it about, you know, 10 times a week,
sure.
and it doesn't work. And so level 4 moves us into the discovery that I don't have to be God. That God exists in and of himself, and I can participate in ultimate, absolute, perfect, final, unconditional and unconditioned truth, love, goodness or justice, beauty and being. And that my role is to be loved by this infinite source into eternity. And so what it does, level 4, gets rid of the crisis of level 3, love and trying to do everything for everybody. Number 1, it allows me to say, I don't have to be God. So I could stop solving the whole world's problems and just take care of my one little piece. Let God solve the rest of the world's problems.
what you said, just to recap, mm-hmm. what you said you see in television today, in our culture today, the physical, obviously. The second one, the achievement, ego, popularity, it's obvious in the media today. But even in the last few years, there's been a new rage, a new popularity of doing kind deeds for other people.
And that's good.
And that is good.
Level two.
But the reason I mention it is because I think our society has intuitively discovered that level two, just achieving in popularity, isn't doing it.
Right.
That I have to give of myself somehow, but they're stopping there.
The problem with these self-help books, though, that teach you just, you know, go beyond yourself, give a good to your community, go out and start a, you know, Down with Trash Club in your high school or whatever. The problem with them is that after a while, you're going to start to wonder, you know, this is all nice and good, but I can't solve world hunger. You know, I can't solve all the people who are 90,000 or whatever the number's up to now, the people who have died in India because of an earthquake. I can't deal with all this. It's too much. And that can cause incipient despair as well.
Quickly, how do you go from that level three of contribution giving of yourself, to do the good deeds, to the level four of the unconditional love? Practically speaking, how do we go there?
In my own faith tradition as a Catholic, is to focus on what God means by unconditional love. And if you focus on the words of the Eucharist, right, what does he say? This is my body, which will be given up for you. And in the Greek translation, the Greeks could have used two words. There are two words for body. There's sarx and there's soma. Sarx means flesh, right? But they didn't use flesh. They didn't use sarx. They used soma, which means my flesh, yes, that too, but my whole entire being. Soma means my body, my spirit, my will, my freedom, my divinity, my everything. This is my whole entire self, which will be given up for you. And what does John say as a definition of love? Love? What is love in John? Right? Love is that you give, there's no greater love than this, mm-hmm. that a man give his life for his friends. So what is God telling us when he gives us the words of consecration? What he's saying is unconditional love is my gift of my entire self for you. We recognize that and know that as Catholics, and we will know level four love. And what,
when we come to know him?
When we come to know him. And that's what level four love is.
And then in level four, to truly be happy, bringing this to the end now, to be truly happy is to love God and to walk in obedience to God?
Yes. It really does end up being a surrender. Mm-hmm. It is to surrender all of my level one, two, and three passions for a level four.
Does that mean I can't be popular or achieve?
Not if it gets in the way of your love of God. Yes, you can seek to be popular if what you want out of popularity is to have a lot of people respect you so that you can teach them greater goods. If what you want out of popularity is for people to respect you for you.
Period.
There's the problem there, right. And you won't be happy.
We're going to take a quick question here, but I want to ask you in a moment how this relates to abortion and all that, because that's what I'm curious about. Let's go to an email. Ashley?
Mm-hmm. Our first email is from Anne Fruchin. She says, do the four levels of happiness correspond to the human developmental stages? In other words, the infant level, six-year-old level,
et cetera. Okay.
Well, yes, they do. And hi, Anne. I actually know Anne. She's a good friend of mine back in Spokane. And that's a good question, because four levels of happiness do relate developmentally, but it's different for every person. I would say that level one, you know, we're all born. Mm-hmm. Actually, we're all conceived with a level one drive, you know, self-sustenance. Mm-hmm. Level two drive is awakened, I would say, as early as 6 months, where the person starts to discover the self and the baby recognizes, hey, these are my hands. They belong to me. I have an eye. Mm-hmm. You know, that's me. So level two would be awakening in the early 6 months of life. And then I would say that level three, that starts to come probably when the child starts, maybe four or five, when the child starts to get a sense of beyond himself.
Sure.
And sees the world.
Doing something for mama.
That's right. Whatever. Of course, level four love will come whenever the good Lord wills it.
Sure. And parents have something to do with that in training their children. Let's get into this issue of abortion. Our society wants to be happy. And I know that abortions oftentimes are, people go through an abortion because they see having a child as adding up to, I'm not going to be happy.
Right.
But how do these fit in?
That's right. Remember, happiness is the one thing that can be willed for itself. Everything else is willed for the sake of happiness. Nobody wants an abortion because they want to get an abortion.
Right.
People want an abortion because they believe that it will make them happy. Now remember this. The way you view happiness in life is going to affect the way you view every other important key cultural term. How I view success Right? Level one success means having a lot of things. Level two success means having the competitive edge.
Mm-hmm.
Level three success means giving a lot to a lot of people. Level four success means trusting in God entirely with my whole life so that He can do the most with my gifts. So somebody who sees life through level one, two eyeglasses, who is at a point in their life where they want to achieve a job or want to achieve a college education or want to achieve some other, you know, level one, two goal in their life, and a baby all of a sudden comes, that baby is going to be seen as a problem. That baby is not going to be seen as an opportunity for happiness, mm-hmm. but as a squasher of happiness.
A real roadblock.
A real roadblock. And so abortion is a solution to a problem if all that makes life worth living is physical pleasure, possession, and ego high. But on level three and four, abortion becomes a terrible tragedy, not just because it kills millions of innocents, but because it kills our own opportunity to reach outside of ourselves and in an incredible mystery to the needs of another that has entered into our lives at a most wonderful moment, a moment where I will have to suffer something mm-hmm. on level one and two in order to give life on level three and four.
But that's the key to happiness.
Right, the key to happiness.
Which is opposite of what the world is saying.
Isn't that interesting how a baby actually opens the door to happiness on level three and four, just as the door is closing to you on level one and mm-hmm. two? Interesting how God does that. And that relates, by the way, quite well to the euthanasia issue, because quite frequently people think quality of life is a reason for euthanasia. You hear this all the time, you know, and I hear it all the time, certainly in debates, where people say, well, Camille, how can you force somebody to stay alive in the last 6 months of life when their quality of life is practically zero? And the first answer is, of course, I'm not forcing anybody to stay alive. The Catholic Church certainly believes that if your body is naturally attempting to shut down, you don't have to be hooked up to tubes and machines. You are certainly allowed to allow your body to die naturally. The problem is, what if the person doesn't die as soon as you would like them to? And then are you allowed to kill him, to hasten his death? And the answer to that is, no, not if you believe in true love. Because quality of life, what do you, that's the second question, what do you mean by quality of life? Quality of life level one, mm-hmm. right? Pleasure to pain ratio. Quality of life level two, he who wins more has high quality.
Can't achieve anything.
Level three, you know, am I able to contribute? Well, you know, gosh, I had to give up all my projects because I'm suffering in bed. My life isn't meaningful because I can't give to people anymore. Or are you talking about quality of life level four? Because I have seen incredible transformations of people in hospitals who have very little time left, 6 months of life left to live, who all of a sudden, because level one, two doors are closed to them, you know, I can't compete anymore, I can't really get physical pleasures anymore, all of a sudden now level three, four love is completely open to it, to them, because that's all they have left.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time in their life, they're open up to the opportunity of love, gift of self-compassion, healing relationships, mending old wounds, listening to family, mm-hmm. coming alive in the deeper messages of life, leaving an inspirational story behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesdays with Maury, right? You remember that
yep.
book that came out? That kind of love is sometimes, in fact, frequently most poignant in the last 6 months of life when we are most debilitated.
Isn't it interesting that book became so popular? Tuesdays with Maury. I think it strikes a chord. Let me ask you this. I know what you're saying. I'm with you, Camille. I think this is phenomenal stuff. And I've been saying it. You've been saying it. The Catholic Church has been teaching it for years and years and years and years and years. But let me play devil's advocate for a minute.
Okay.
That's nice, Camille. And I'm glad that you found that in somehow in
you
your
sound like my opponent already.
Somehow in your intellectual workings, this has worked for you. Isn't this one way, or are you saying that this is the way?
I'm saying this is the way. How do I know that? Because every human being has a desire for ultimate, infinite, absolute, final truth and love and goodness. Ask anybody. I do this all the time.
Yeah.
Walk into secular high schools, public universities, churches, you name it, businesses. I've been there. And the response from the audience is always the same. Yeah, I admit it. I
want to be loved.
I want to be loved by an unconditional source that loves me absolutely into all of eternity. I just don't believe you can get it. Well, that will lead to incipient despair, or you can engage in the leap of faith. Try it. Hmm. And that's what we do. Try to lead people into that level 3-4 love.
How are you communicating this to young adults around the country, and what kind of response are you getting from them?
An empowering powerful, incredible response from young people. Because I'll tell you something, I go into high schools, you give people these four levels of happiness, and the first thing they say is, why haven't we ever heard this before? Why isn't anybody telling us this? How come we have all these ethics classes in our high school that talks about, you know, what's really right is what's right for you? But nobody ever gives you a sense of responsibility to the other, and that not being responsible to the other will make me sad. How come we don't learn this before? They love it. Mm-hmm. And their eyes open. Now, I speak to people of faith and people with no faith. And you remember St. Paul talks about speaking to the person from where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've got to reach a person using philosophy and we're not ready for theology yet, that's, of course, where the Pope comes in with fides et ratio, that these two things are complementary, not opposed. So I entice the young people by saying, you desire more than just the physical. You desire more than just the ego high, right? You want something more than that. So we reach people in a variety of ways. We have a speakers bureau that goes out and speaks in public. We will come and speak in any public setting that people would like us to, and we'll have a phone number later on for people if they want to call and ask for us to come. We have retreats that we actually give. I have a Catholic retreat and a general Christian retreat as well for young people. We have one for mothers and their high school-aged daughters, which is a lot of fun. We have one for women. We have one for adults in general. And then we have one for young people in general, boys and girls together. And it's incredible, the transformation that is made in the way people see themselves. Four levels of happiness is wonderful because it's practical.
Mm-hmm.
It gives people a way to analyze their own life. So, you know, all your viewers are going to be going, you know, back to their job tomorrow, and they're going to be thinking, that's a very level one person. We categorize, and it's easy to remember. And we even give people these little wallet-sized cards that they carry around in their wallets, and they can order them from us, that go through those four levels of happiness. So if you start to forget, you pull it out and you say, I'm living on level two. It's not making me happy. I'm experiencing all those crises, jealousy, anger, aggression. I don't want that. I want three. I want four. It's a way to remember. And a little card is also a way to help teach your friends to spread the word.
What you're saying really fits into what St. Augustine said. Remember when he said that our hearts are restless?
Oh, yes.
Until
they rest in thee, my God.
Mm-hmm.
For we are made for his divine love.
You know what? I sit here and, to be honest with you, I sit here and I say, boy, Camille, I believe this. I do. And I know it's truth. But there's such a big world out there. This, you know, you look at the polls on abortion today and what people think is right and wrong. And,
yes.
And sometimes it looks like this is impossible.
It is impossible.
What do we do?
It is impossible if it were left up to man. But fortunately, it's not. It's up to God. And so my job is to take this message to as many people as I can. His job is to maximize it mm-hmm. in the world, to optimize it. And then the job of all the people who are listening, their job is to spread it to the people they know. And our lives end up being like a cone, where we start as a point in existence. But you remember George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life,
mm-hmm.
and how he found out what would happen if he wasn't alive, and the angel Clarence comes to him and says, you know, all those men on that transport died. You weren't there to save your brother Harry, or Harry wasn't there to save those men because you weren't there to save Harry. And the point was that our lives affect like this cone structure. Where we affect
exponential curve.
That's right. And so we go out and teach the world as we can. And if we bring the message to enough people, God can do incredibly powerful things with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our job.
We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we have some questions, some more emails that we'd like to ask you. This is fascinating. I think about level four and the unconditional love, that not only do we want unconditional love, we want to be unconditionally loved, but I really believe, too, that we are created in the image of God. And so there is a desire in our own hearts to love unconditionally. We want to give ourselves totally to others, but there's a lot of impediments in the way that keep us from pouring ourselves out. It may be that maybe it's not masculine in our society to do that. And it gets back to the level two thing. I'm not going to achieve out. People think I'm a real, you know, loser.
Right.
I won't be masculine, whatever. But I think as we have a desire to be loved unconditionally, we also have a desire to love unconditionally.
We do.
Think so?
I think we do. Yeah.
I do too. And I think you do too. And I think that what Camille has said has really struck a chord in your heart. And just stay with us. We're going to take some more questions. We have a few more things we want to talk about here. But ask God. Ask God about your own life. Where are you right now? Are you in level one? And all you're seeking is pleasure? Is it level two? Are you just, if we went to your bookshelf, and would we find just dozens of books on achieving and how you can become a better you? Where are you at in this right now? God wants to bring you into the life of the Trinity. You can be happy. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. We're talking with Camille Diablasi. Be right back.
EWTN News Link. I'm Raymond Arroyo. In Egypt this week, a leading Coptic cleric is charging that Muslims are now, quote, encouraged to kill Christians. A court in southern Egypt sentenced 4 Muslims to prison and acquitted 92 others for a massacre that left 20 Christians dead last year. According to Bishop Wissa of Baliana, the short sentences and acquittals show that the lives of Christians have no value under Muslim law in Egypt. And Cardinal Francis George of Chicago is set to conduct the Pope's annual Lenten retreat. Cardinal George has an extensive background in philosophy and is expected to take a more scholarly approach to this year's presentation. The retreat will be held March 4th through 10th in the Pontiff's private chapel. The offices of the Roman Curia will be closed so that ranking Vatican prelates will be able to join the Pope for these Lenten spiritual exercises. I'll be back later with another news link. Welcome back. We're talking with Camille Dublasie, and if you would like to get a hold of her, if you'd like her to speak at your event, if you'd like more information on life principles, you can call her at 877-345-LIFE. That's 877-345-LIFE. You can go to her website, www.lifeprinciples.net, lifeprinciples.net. That phone number, once again, 877-345-LIFE. I hope you get a lot of response. I think you're going to get a lot of response.
I sure hope
I know if I wasn't here, I'd call you.
We have people standing by.
We do have a question right here in the coffee shop. Gabe.
Hey, I was wondering, going back to the euthanasia question, a lot of people would choose euthanasia to help others get out of a suffering situation. But how, in a practical way, could I reach out to someone to let them know that suffering, you know, to deal with suffering?
Mm-hmm.
She hit it right on the head there.
Very good question, because remember, the way you view happiness is going to interpret the way you view suffering, too. Level one suffering, mm-hmm. worthless, mm-hmm. completely meaningless if I think life is pleasure and possession. Level two suffering is the idea that if I can bring it under my control and it can make me stronger, then suffering has meaning. But once I begin to lose my abilities, then suffering is meaningless. Janet Adkins, right, the first victim of Kevorkian, who discovered she had Parkinson's disease. She was in the beginning of stages of it. She had many years to go. But right when she discovered she was starting to lose her tennis game against her son, she sought the help of Jack Kevorkian and had him kill her.
She couldn't achieve anymore.
Level two happiness, right? Level three view of suffering, which is that suffering is good when it can bring me out of myself to help other people. But what happens to the person who's given and given and given, and now I'm laid up in a hospital bed with 6 months left of life to give. I'm sitting there every day, and I'm lonely, and I'm bored, and I can't give beyond myself anymore. That's where suffering four is needed. And suffering four all of a sudden brings the redemptive aspect of suffering to come alive. The big problem with our culture on suffering is that we don't understand suffering. We're afraid of it. We run away from it. We're afraid of people who suffer. We don't want to be by them because it makes us think of our own suffering. And when we encounter suffering, we don't understand it. We think it's either a punishment from God or a test from God. That may or may not be true. But love and suffering are not opposed. They are quite compatible. Because it is in our moments of weakness that God can sometimes point to himself as the greatest hope. And so what happens is we've actually, to answer your question, we've created a program called Being With. Well, actually, we just started. It doesn't really exist as a program yet, but we're in the testing stages.
That's
right. What I did one day was we sat down at lunch and I read a newspaper article about how patients used to request euthanasia for pain. But now we've discovered that 99.9% of all pain is controllable. And the 1.1% that's not, we can control within tolerable limits. And laws are being passed to help, help doctors learn pain control, and doctors are being trained. And the second reason was depression. When somebody was depressed and couldn't understand their suffering, it would be terrible, and they would request euthanasia. But now we know how to diagnose depression and how to cure the depression, bring it under control. The third reason now, people say, I'm not in pain and I'm not depressed, but I feel unappreciated, and I don't really feel like I can give. So I thought, there's a hospital across the street from where I work. I went there one day, and I said, I would like to be with your patients who suffer the most. And I thought, okay, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, you know, there's two types of love. There's doing for, where we give to other people. We do, we build a house, we give you things. And then there's being with love, where I don't have to do anything. I can just be present to you, look at you, mm-hmm. smile, talk, a touch, right? Just the presence of another being loving you and appreciating you. I said, that's the kind of love I want. And that's the kind of love that's very underemphasized. Our culture thinks, you know, if I can't do anything for you anymore, your life maybe isn't worth living and maybe it's time to die now.
Right.
But we lose out on the being with love, the kind of love where you can go to somebody and say, thank you. I know this sounds odd to somebody who doesn't have level four faith. Thank you so much for suffering and allowing me the opportunity to come alive in love. What does the word compassion mean? It's got a Latin root, cum mm-hmm. passio.
With
passio means to suffer, the passion of Christ, right? Mm-hmm. The sufferings of Christ. Cum passio means to suffer with. How do you suffer with somebody you've just killed? You mm-hmm. can't. To suffer with means to be there with the person in their suffering. And so the one point of the Being With Project is to get people all over the country, no matter what your education, no matter what your faith, no matter what your experience, to go into the hospital and be a Being With volunteer, where you go up to patients and say, basically, not maybe in these words, thank you so much. I appreciate you in your suffering. Mm-hmm. I will do everything I can to try to stop your suffering and to ease your suffering. But I will not kill you, and I will not lead you to despair, because without you here, I would not know the meaning of the words compassion, care, concern, gift of self.
And what you're talking about isn't just in a book, which we hear, has a book here called Healing the Culture.
Yes.
That you're one of the co-writers.
Yes, a whole chapter in there on suffering, as a matter of fact.
Really? Mm-hmm. And we want to let people know about the book, Healing the Culture, and you can printed by Ignatius, and you can get a hold of this through Life Principles. You're not just talking about life principles. You've seen this work.
I have seen it work. I've seen it in the hospital. I'll tell you a little story if we have time for it.
You've got about 3 or 4 minutes.
Well, I went into the hospital one day and sat next to a guy. I call him Mr. Watson. And Mr. Watson was a man who talked all about himself and how level two great he was. And he was about 80 years old and had a heart attack. And I listened for about an hour, and I got kind of bored. And I said, thank you, Mr. Watson. I've got to go see other people now. And I started to leave. He grabbed my arm and he said, please don't leave. I need you. I don't want anything else from you but your presence.
Wow.
And I sat back down. I said, whoa, what's wrong? Well, it turns out that Mr. Watson felt like a burden. He said, you don't know what it's like to be in a hospital where the doctors and the nurses, these people with PhDs and with doctor, you know, MDs, have to sit there and take care of me. They have to feed me and bathe me and clothe me and toilet me and take care of me in my stinkiness and in my ugliness and in my decrepitness. You don't know how bad that feels. And all of a sudden the Holy Spirit hit me, and I said, Mr. Watson, don't you know that your job is more important than anybody else's job in this whole hospital with all their MDs and PhDs? Don't you know that your suffering and your neediness calls them alive to love, and that love is the most important thing in the world, and that without you, they wouldn't get that opportunity? His eyes got this big, and he said, you're right. My job is the most important job in this whole hospital. And I said, yes, it is. And I gave him a little rock in the shape of a heart. I said, this represents God's heart. Every time you forget that, you squeeze this little heart to remember that your job came from God, who loves you unconditionally. A week later, I went back to the hospital. He wasn't there. But a nurse flagged me down and she said, I don't know what you did to that guy, Mr. Watson, but every time we saw him after that, all he ever did was squeeze this little rock. That's all he ever did. And he was always talking about his important job. And that difference made the difference between life and death for Mr. Watson, because he was on his way out. And about 4 weeks later, I got a call from him who said, thank you for saving my life, because now I have a reason to live.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful. We only have a couple minutes left. I wish we could have another hour together, because I find this so fascinating. In the couple minutes we have left, what would you say to our young viewers, high school students, college students, where they're at right now? They're studying, they're thinking about going to college, they're thinking about a major, what they're going to do with their life. What would you say to them concerning these four levels?
On my cell phone, it gives you the opportunity when you turn it on that you could put a little message on it, like hello or good morning. Mine says, do everything for God. That's the message that I would give you. Learn how to properly order those four levels of happiness in your life by practice. And don't be afraid of failure. We will fall because it's the natural habit of human beings to want the physical pleasure and the ego high. Be easy on yourself. But remember that all of those are not meant as goods in and of themselves. They're all meant for the sake of one thing, happiness. What is ultimate happiness? Basically, giving my life over in surrender to God. So I would, one thing I would teach is to learn how to balance all of those levels of happiness to experience true joy. And the second thing is, share it with your friends. They're easy to remember. Four simple levels. If you can't remember, call that toll-free number. We'll give you a little card that you can even give to your friends. They're really cheap because they're just little cards. And give them out to your friends. Share the message with them.
Camille, it's been great.
God bless you.
Love to have you back in the future. And we'll go on to levels. We'll talk about something else. I mean, I could stay here for the rest of my life just talking about this. It's been good. Well, it's been challenging. And
we'll go out afterwards and have some level one coffee and donuts and discuss level 3-4 love.
Okay, well, we'll do that. Folks, I want to thank Camille for being here. And I want to challenge you, and not so much challenge you, but encourage you to really take a look at where your life is at. Where are you going today? Maybe you just tuned in. You're wondering, why did I stay with this program the whole hour? I've never watched religious programming. I've never seen Life on the Rock or EWTN before. Are you at a point where all you're looking for is the physical pleasure? The minute you have pain, you'll reach despair because it doesn't make sense anymore. Is all your life about achievement, ego, popularity, but yet you're empty? Are you even giving outside of yourself to a few people, but you find that you're still discouraged, that there's still a dead end? God wants you to enter into the life of the Trinity. You can only do that through Jesus Christ. Jesus said, I am the way, the life, and the truth. Give your life to Jesus today. Give your whole life to Him today. He loves you very much. God bless you. See you next week.